Welcome to Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks. My guest today is Ed Sein, Democratic candidate for United States Congress in Indiana's 8th District. Ed, welcome back to Policy and Politics.
How you doing, Dave? Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm doing great. Glad to have you back on the program as we gear up for the primary election on Tuesday. You and I had a conversation several weeks ago. Here it is, the final weekend before Indiana's primary election. And I haven't noticed you spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on TV or anything like that, first of all. So where's your TV ad?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I'm not a millionaire. I'm not, not blatantly trying to buy this seat.
You're not like self-funding or loaning yourself $500,000? You don't have that kind of change sitting around the house somewhere?
Yeah, no, sadly not. And if I did, who would want to invest in an institution that has a 12% approval rating? Come on.
You know, I wanted that job at one time, but I'm not so sure. But I guess the obvious question has to be, to anyone listening right now, no matter what their politics is, what in the world would motivate a guy like you to want to run for United States Congress when there's a 12% approval rating?
Well, I'm looking to this like jury duty. It's my responsibility. We all have to chip in. I'm not going to take what's going on lying down. The fact of the matter is that it's the people's house. I'm a regular person. I fulfill the requirements as outlined in the Constitution. And I know a thing or two about life. I might be new to politics, but I'm certainly not new to life.
Well, and let's talk about like what we're seeing on the airwaves right now. And I guess I want to give kind of a counter chance for you. We're seeing Mark Mesmer. We're seeing John Hostetler. We're seeing Richard Moss. We're seeing Dominique Cavanaugh. And I think Christy Risk is late to the race, but she's starting to make some noise. You've seen some of the messages and you've heard people talking as you're out politicking. The issues that they're focusing on and the issues that you're talking to voters about, what's the difference?
The difference is that, look, we all have to be concerned about what's happening with the nation at large and in the world. But fact of the matter is that there's things that are happening right here in our congressional district that nobody is talking about.
Like what?
Well, like the, you know, things like the business cabal in Jasper that's running this mid-states corridor that's going to blast through 900 acres of virgin forest and wetlands and displace 100 families and cut 4 historic Indiana farms in half. For what?
Is this going to be the Mike Braun Memorial Highway one day, or what are you saying?
It's exactly right. It's a new terrain highway that serves no purpose. It's already appropriated $3.5 million of taxpayer money with a shady process that denied any kind of public comment period on this thing.
And if I understand the proposal correctly, they're trying to connect Interstate 69 somewhere near the Crane area. And they're trying to go down the U.S. 231 corridor toward the Ligoti, Jasper area, if I understand correctly. Or maybe at one time they were even talking French Lick, but I think that kind of got kicked to the side. But it would connect down toward Interstate 64, right, and go perhaps all the way to Owensboro?
That's right. And rather than use or augment the existing corridor of U.S. 231, they want to make a new terrain highway, a 4-lane highway blasting through our resources, our natural forests.
And you don't think that's a good idea?
For what? For who? Who's it going to serve?
Well, I mean, I was for I-69 when some people weren't for it, and I think we now see that that was probably a good idea for Southwest Indiana, but I'm very familiar with the area that you're talking about since I used to represent that area as a state legislator. 231's in pretty good condition all the way from Crane down to Interstate 64, but it's only 2-lane, and I guess there's been some debate over the years. Instead of a new terrain highway, is there a way to make more center lanes to make the congestion less of a problem, especially as you get closer to Ligoti and mainly Jasper, too? That's where the real congestion seems to be at. But yet, do you need a whole new terrain highway, I guess, is the magic question. Would Mike Braun help make that happen if he becomes governor, in your opinion?
Well, if NDOT thought it was a good idea, we've gotten funding from them. Apparently, they've been talking about this for 50 years. It doesn't serve anybody's purpose except the special interests that are driving the agenda when it comes to Republican politics in this state. Environment be damned.
Okay, so you're not for a new terrain highway that Mike Braun and Mark Mesmer and others have been talking about. I think they call it the Mid-Continent Highway. Is that what they're calling it?
The Mid-States Corridor.
Mid-States Corridor.
No, okay. I'm not for it.
Okay, so you're not for that. Anything that would make you different? I mean, I know they're talking about the border. Where do you stand on the border?
Look, we're talking about border security. That's not even a political issue to me. The fact of the matter is that, yeah, we all suffer from an insecure border. But I'm not worried about families that are trying to make a better life for themselves. You know, I'm concerned about, yeah, some, you know, actor coming in and maybe trying to blow up something or doing something really, really heinous. But the flip side of the border security thing is the language that Republicans are using to demonize people that are coming across. They're using the same verbiage, the same wording, the same type of messaging that inspired the murderers that perpetrated the massacres at the Tree of Life Synagogue, that the guy that shot up that parking lot in Buffalo, the El Paso Walmart. Right? They're using this hateful language that is otherizing and inspiring these heinous, murderous acts. That is a threat to national security.
But it sounds like to me you're tired of all the demonizing and let's really have a security bill. They had a chance to actually vote on one recently, but apparently it got talked out of the process at the last minute by the guy running for president.
That's right. One man upended the whole thing, and they got things in it that they never could have gotten otherwise. It was bent over backwards.
I think Jim Lankford out of Oklahoma was the sponsor, and he almost got it to the finish line, and it was very bipartisan, but apparently not acceptable to the man down at the golf course.
That's right. Well, when the phone from Mar-a-Lago rings, you know who bends over backwards to pick it up, right?
They definitely bend over, it sure seems. We're talking with Ed Sein, Democratic candidate for Congress, as we gear up for Tuesday's primary election. You do have three opponents, and in all fairness, we'll mention their names. You've ran into them as you've been out and about, right?
Once or twice, yeah.
Eric Hurt is one of them. And let's see, there's a Peter Priest.
That's right.
And then the gentleman that's the school bus driver.
Mike Talarczyk.
Okay, so we want to mention their names and wish them well. But at the same time, you're running and you feel like you've got the edge because why?
Well, I'm putting in the miles. I mean, I'll have to put new tires on this car that I'm rubbing down US 41 and 69. I'm going everywhere, man. There's a song about that. Like the Johnny Cash soundtrack is going through my head all the time. And I get to see this beautiful countryside where we live. And the fact is that people from out of state, they come to Indiana and they recognize how beautiful it is. Wabash River Valley, Ohio River Valley. This congressional district is the largest, geographically speaking. And I get to see some beautiful, beautiful countryside.
But it's a Republican district. Well, let's just point that out. I mean, it used to be called the Bloody Eight, but there have been two legislative map changes since then. And when you look at the trends, especially when Donald Trump's been at the top of the ticket, it looks like it's just dominant red. How can you argue to people that are listening that you're a viable candidate for Congress, Ed?
Well, the fact of the matter is that my viability is based on who I am and what I know and what I stand for. It's definitely not because I'm the kind of person that judges a man's character by the size of his wallet. I'm hoping there are enough Hoosiers out there that recognize that a real person that doesn't really even aspire to make this an encore career, but is doing it for the right reasons to represent humbly the people that need representation, working class people like me, that should be enough.
And so what would make you different than, let's say, a Mark Mesmer or a John Hostetler in your mind, if you were lucky enough to be the congressman?
Well, besides being not bought and paid for by the party that they're supposed to represent, I'm my own man.
Okay. And so basically all these attacks and these special interest groups, you're not interested in help from them, it sounds like.
No. They're trying to buy the person. They're trying to buy the seat. And I don't understand why. None of them stay in for any length of time. You know, the Indiana caucus is the weakest one in Washington. There's nobody in leadership.
Yeah,
they can't get anything done.
I did notice that, in all respect to Congressman Bouchon, he has the highest effective rating when it comes to the congressman in our state.
I know. It's like a punchline. It's like it can't be true.
Apparently, that's what the insiders are claiming when it comes to their success based on the bills that have been presented and actually gotten passed. When you look at Congress as a whole, you mentioned the low approval rating. But boy, there are people claiming that this current Congress has been the least productive in modern history by their output, number of bills, and just lack of productivity. What would you say to that?
I would say that the numbers don't lie. I mean, history is history. You can just look and see and make the count. And objectively, you know, this is not like, you know, alternative facts. 4 + 4 = 8.
You're out and about. And since you've lived in this area for nearly 3 decades, why is a guy like Donald Trump so popular in your view? And what can we do to get people's attention when it comes to getting them more involved in government and voting and so forth?
I think Donald Trump makes people feel that they're seen. Everyone wants to be seen. People that self-identify as conservatives and Republicans, they want to be seen. They don't want to be characterized as someone with some, you know, unreasonable rage, right? Rage is something that is not rational. Now, people can have resentments, all right, and we can disagree on what the source of the resentment is. But Donald Trump doesn't see Hoosiers. He doesn't see anybody that is not richer than him. He doesn't have any respect for anybody. He wouldn't put a fire out with you know what, with half the people who he claims to stand for and fight for.
Are you surprised that despite all the problems he's not only faced from, you know, legal challenges since the January 6th incident, but now he's on trial in New York City for the Stormy Daniels hush money situation. He's already been proven guilty of sexual assault in the E. Jean Carroll situation. We still got, of course, verdicts in the New York ethics, or not ethics, but the business interest documents and all the misleading paperwork that was obviously inflated. He's the leading candidate for president on the Republican Party. How can this be? Or any party for that matter?
Well, I think politics being what it is, they've successfully made it so that people are so sick and tired of it, so disgusted, that they just pull back from it. They just pull back because really it's the path of least resistance. But I'm hoping that there are enough people like me who realize that, you know what, we weren't granted freedom in this country. We fought for freedom. And these rights that we have, they're not given to us by anybody. They're inalienable rights. They are part of the human condition. That's part of what makes us unique in our world and makes what our system of governance unique. Donald Trump doesn't subscribe. The man has no principles. And the fact is that I think, yeah, voter fatigue, path of least resistance, yeah, there's a lot of people that could be forgiven for that, but this is not like normal times.
Well, let's dive in to the fact that you've got a primary on Tuesday, and even though you've got your kind of laser focused on being the congressman eventually when you get that opportunity after Tuesday's primary, if you're successful, and you're obviously wanting to speak to Democratic voters who are hopefully going to go vote between now and Tuesday, because we're already getting reports from a lot of clerk's offices across the districts, or at least this district, there's not a lot of early vote from either side. Of course, the Democratic ballot doesn't have a lot to vote on, but with the governor's race having so many candidates, not only for Congress and governor, you'd think there'd be a lot more early vote. That's not the case. I guess make your plea to Democrats why you believe you're the best candidate to lead them this fall against whoever that Republican nominee might be.
I'm the best candidate because, frankly, I'm the person that is the most cognizant of the issues. I really, truly believe that. I know my history. I was a teacher candidate. I got my degree in history at USI. That was going to be my encore career. But unfortunately, I make more money selling guitars. Now, if that is an indictment of how teachers are compensated in this country, I don't know what is. But the fact of the matter is that I know what I'm talking about. I've done my homework. I have made it my point my entire adult life to know the issues of the day and to be able to speak to them, because that's how I express my patriotism. I love being a Hoosier. I love living here. I live here on purpose for 25 years, 26 years. I've raised a family here. But I'm a native New Yorker. I'm born and bred in the city. I know how to talk to city people. I know how to talk to all different kinds of people. My profession, chosen, has allowed me to cross all kinds of socioeconomic classes, types of people, races, creeds, religions. And the fact of the matter is that I know how to connect with people. It's something that is my pleasure to do. I really feel, and my sales philosophy has always been, if you can't love everybody, you can't sell anybody. And sales is all about personal relationships. So that's what I want to have with all of my constituents, whether you vote for me or not.
All right. Well, let's talk about like what you would do if you were a congressman. What would be some of the first things you would focus on as a newly elected congressman in Indiana's 8th district if you were successful?
Well, I'd let the Republicans know that I'm not someone to be pushed around. I'm not afraid of them. I'm not intimidated. You want to talk? We'll talk. We can agree to disagree like gentlemen and women, and fine. We're going to change the tenor and the tone of the political discourse. My neighbors, where I live in Warrick County, we don't talk to each other that way, even if we differ politically. Not the way that legislators would have us believe that we should be talking to each other. So right there, I would start with having an open hand of friendship, and people recognize and remember that we're all Americans and we're all in this together.
So you're trying to suggest that you would definitely work across the aisle with both sides. And let's use the most recent proposal that Jim Lankford had on the table. If you would have been in Congress and that would have come up for a vote, with what you've studied on that particular proposal, would you have supported that piece of bipartisan legislation?
In this moment of time, absolutely yes. Are there things about it that were imperfect? Of course. But that is the nature of legislating. It's
sure.
compromise.
You never get everything you want. I know there's a certain faction right now in Congress that thinks they should get everything and or nothing. But that's just not the way that our forefathers set this system up, of
that's
course.
Right.
Obviously, women's reproductive rights are a big issue, especially nationally. You've seen yeah. the battle where Donald Trump obviously is taking credit for overturning Roe versus Wade with his three selections for the Supreme Court. Give me your thoughts on this hot issue.
This is the kitchen table issue of kitchen table issues. This is a discussion that should be had between grandma, mom, elder sister, aunt. All right. This is between a woman and her doctors. All right. Whoever, this has nothing to do with the men in Indianapolis or in Washington, D.C.
And even though Indiana had the first state legislation, one of the most restrictive in the country, now Florida just this week now has a 6-week ban. So this is actually growing across the country. What, a couple of dozen states, I think we're up to now, that have pretty much abortion bans almost across the board. Would you like to see national legislation that would make it legal everywhere, like President Biden is proposing if he's reelected?
Absolutely. We obviously cannot leave it up to the individual states. We're not going to have the balkanized country where women are second-class citizens in some places and not in others.
So you would support basically reinstore Roe versus Wade is where you would be on that issue?
Absolutely.
Okay. In the 8th District, a lot of hunters and fishermen, a lot of gun enthusiasts. Where do you stand on the Second Amendment?
Yeah, the Second Amendment, honestly, I like to focus on basically agreeing with what most of the people in law enforcement talk about, all right? I think gun owners and Second Amendment activists should be the tip of the spear when it comes to modeling proper storage of firearms, proper carrying practices. It shouldn't be a political statement. If you want to carry, that's fine. That's your business. But you shouldn't be brandishing, and there's a difference.
So you're basically not opposed. I mean, you're okay with open carry, if is that what I'm hearing?
I think that anyone that paid $150 for their permit should get their money back. But the bottom line is that, yeah, there are people that should not have guns. And there are plenty of Second Amendment advocates that believe that. You know, whether they want to come out and say it is one thing. But the fact of the matter is that we all know there's some people that after a certain point, you may have to take the driver's license away from them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you want to say about that issue related to guns?
Yeah, we're not going to unring this bell. I'm not out to take people's guns. What I want is a new culture led by those who are most proud in expressing this Second Amendment right. I am not a product of the sportsman culture, all right? This is not a culture that I grew up with. I respect it. I've been living among it for 25 years. There are plenty of good, responsible citizens that I know personally carry, and I'm glad that they do. But the fact of the matter is that if we're not going to have proper modeling of the behavior and really a change in the way that we are, should be our expectations to just be in society, not go to a Super Bowl parade and then get shot, or just being living in a society where it's not a matter of if but when we're directly touched by gun violence, then the loudest voices in the room when it comes to proponents of gun you know ownership should be the ones leading the charge and how to do it properly.
And by the way, this happens to be the 25th anniversary this week of Columbine out in Colorado, where the school shooting took place. And unfortunately, there's been 400 plus school shootings since that time in 25 years in this country. So we've obviously got to figure out a way to keep our kids safe at all times. But it's an issue that apparently still needs a little more attention than it's been getting.
That's a fact. That's a fact. My boys are 21 and 23. And when they lived, when they were living in school age, I always had to tell them, hey, keep your wits about you. All right. My wife is a substitute teacher right now. It's personal for us.
Let's see. Let's move on to some other issues. Obviously, since COVID, things are kind of getting back to normal when it comes to supply distributions and all the interruptions that COVID brought. And obviously, that helped escalate the inflationary problems that we're experiencing. Not only the fact that the government did shove a lot of money out there, too, but what can we do from a government standpoint of getting prices down? I mean, inflation is definitely a factor that's not partisan. I mean, it's hurting everybody. What do you think lawmakers can do to try to bring prices down for everybody?
I don't know. I mean, I'm all for like free markets and, you know, laissez-faire economics. But the normalization of record-breaking corporate profits, I mean, it's all happening in the stores. And I go shopping, we see that, you know, we're getting less for more or paying the same amount for less. The fact of the matter is that we're in a situation where now we're going to have this food cartel where only a couple of companies own every part of it. And there's absolutely no competition, which is really what is part of the problem.
So you think some of this is being manipulated, basically, more than just cost of everything going up, you know, gas and things like that.
Look, when a certain sector, a corporate sector in the food industry, is making record-breaking corporate profits quarter after quarter after quarter, sorry, there's something wrong with this picture.
Well, and I have to bring this up because it was last fall I had John Rusk. He's a candidate for U.S. Senate, or at least he wanted to be until the Republicans found a way to keep him from being on the ballot, from not pulling a Republican ballot to consecutive elections. Mm-hmm. But the same week I was interviewing him on this show, he was found guilty of price gouging through Rose Acre Farms, the huge egg company that he runs. And it was several million dollars of gouging people during COVID. And now he's paying fines for that because apparently there was collusion in that industry on high egg prices. And it wasn't just because of the COVID interruption. There were people apparently like him and others gouging because they saw an opportunity.
Yeah, I really do think, knowing my history, there was at least one time at one moment when the words business and ethics weren't contradictions in terms.
Good point. And again, I'm not saying I'm just saying from what I understand from the news, so I don't get a lawyer sending me like a letter right away. But it was kind of interesting talking to him the same week he's trying to get on the ballot, but at the same time, he's being investigated for price gouging. So I'm just trying to give credibility to the fact that it's not just inflationary. Yeah, when four meat companies own like 80% of the slaughterhouses, yeah, there's some truth to the fact that there's some people being taken advantage of because they're cornering the market.
Yeah, well, we should see there's a pattern here with, you know, businessmen, special interests running for elected office or buying those seats.
Yeah, I'm flabbergasted. Brad Chambers was on this program most recently and obviously a successful businessman, but it looks like the records that I found so far loaned himself $10 million to run for governor. How much you got to loan yourself to run for Congress, Ed? You got a million or two you're going to put aside for this or what? I mean, this is what's kind of crazy. You and I can't get a firm figure on this right now, but I think there's somewhere between $2 and $3 million being spent right now on this 8th District Congressional race, and it's not being spent for you or to hurt you or to help you. It's being spent on the other side.
Yeah, yeah. No, people ask me with a straight face, how are you raising the money to do this? And I'm like, well, you know, it's almost like I stumble over my words. The fact of the matter is that, yeah, individual donations from people that I know that are like who believe in me.
Real life
people. Yeah. You know, go figure.
All right. Well, you got a couple of minutes left in the show before we wrap it up. Tuesday, of course, primary election day. If those folks listening to us are pulling a Democratic ballot, you're one of the four choices for Congress. I guess I'll give you a final minute to make your pitch on why they should vote for you.
Look, I've heard the word courage thrown about quite a bit for Democratic candidates. And the fact is that, yeah, it does take courage to do this. But standing up and showing up is a part of the civic duty that we all share. We are all in this together. And I am not about otherizing people, demonizing people, dehumanizing people. That's not the way to get things done in this country. All of us have benefited at some point from some help historically. All right. When it comes to inclusion and equity, fact is that there are very few so-called legacy white people that came over that could say their ancestry goes back to the Mayflower. All right. We've all benefited, no matter if you're a German, if you have some Irish, if you have some Italian. Don't bother pulling up the ladder now. All right, behind you. We've all benefited. We all have benefited at some point in this country. And it's time to pass the baton and help those out that need help now so we can perpetuate this great American legacy, this great experiment of what America really is.
And you've got a very unique domain site for your website. Give that address, please.
ChangeCongress.com.
Boy, that's breathtaking. ChangeCongress.com. Once they go there, what will they find?
They're going to find me. They're going to find what I'm about. They're going to find other people just like them that believe that this is something, and they're going to have the opportunity to actually help me do this, to help me do this. Because like I said, I'm not self-financing.
So since you don't have $1 million sitting around, you're asking for small donations, I guess?
I need small donations. I need help. Show me. Money talks. This is what we can all do together. Change Congress and change the tenor and tone and get America back on the right track and take it back from the special interests.
But folks, even though this guy's a Democrat and so am I, we want you to go vote and be a part of this democracy that we all need to preserve for good. And just go vote, because it's really sad. I did an interview earlier this week on a radio show in Indianapolis on Tuesday that was being recorded for broadcast today. And the gentleman had talked to the clerk's office that day, and in Marion County, as of this past Monday, had 1% voter turnout.
Yeah, it's really sad. Voting is not a choice. Because voting is about survival, and survival is not a choice.
Folks, go vote. Primary election day is this Tuesday. Polls will be open in Indiana between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. On Tuesday. They'll be open on Saturday in various counties across the 8th District, so just be sure to check your local county, and you'll find some special hours there. And many places will let you vote on Monday morning, but they usually shut it down by noon on Monday as they prepare for the primary election on Tuesday. Ed Sein for Congress, Democratic ticket. Check out his website, changecongress.com. Safe travels to you, my friend, and best of luck to you on Tuesday.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure.
Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks is a production of the DLC Media News Department. Downloads of this program and past shows are available at any one of our DLC Media radio station websites. Follow me on X or Facebook to learn who is appearing next week, as well as the times and list of radio stations where you can hear the show first. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening, and be sure to vote.